Hi, I'm Marty.
I'm Dave.
I'm John.
I'm Aaron.
And this is Door 14 Hockey. Hello, and welcome to Door 14 Hockey. I'm your host, Martin, alongside Dave.
Hi.
John.
Hello.
And Aaron.
Hello.
It's been a while. We're now into our second season of Door 14 Hockey. Guys, it feels like a long, long time.
It does, doesn't it?
It's been a while.
Yeah. I have to say, Marty, I'm really digging the new studio.
Yes, while we were away, we've moved home. And we've now created a new studio, for better words, and we're going to do a bit of a blog post about it and throw up some photographs of our new setup. But yeah, hope you like it and you're feeling at home already in our new studio. What do you think? Yeah.
Absolutely, it's not my living room anymore, so
I now have to supply the tea and biscuits because it's now in my house, which, you know, it's going to be a challenge to make sure we have the right biscuits every month or whatever.
I haven't seen any biscuits yet.
That's a good point, yeah.
You've just fed your face full of food there, so you don't really need biscuits right now. guys, we've been away for a while. This league season has started back in again. We're now, 3 weeks in? 3 weeks into the season already.
Yep.
And if we're looking just at, I suppose the first thing to do before we start looking at anything else, we didn't get a chance to do it before the start of the season started. We did it last year, and I think it's time to do it again this year. First question, as the season starts to roll in, predictions. Do we want to go for it again? Last year, I think it was Dave. Did you get it right last year? You said
Sheffield,
and you got it right. Does anybody want to hazard a guess this year? If we could just go around and see, and if everybody wants to kind of put in their two cents about who they think is going to take the league this year, we'll start with you, John.
I don't know. It's quite hard this year. There's a lot of teams who've come out strong. There's a couple teams who've come out really weak so far. Not to name names, but Brayhead.
I know, who would have thought? We'll get into it a bit
we'll
after.
We'll get into that. I know we're getting into that later on. But as far as the league goes, I would say Giants are probably in with a good shout this year, I think, based on what we've seen over the last... Well, we're 4-0, so that's not bad. Granted, they're all Challenge Cup games, but we can take something from it. Yeah. And maybe Sheffield again this year will look pretty good. They look pretty strong. So I would say Belfast or Sheffield.
Okay, Belfast or Sheffield. So you're sitting on the fence.
I'm sitting on the fence, yeah. I'm traditionally
Dave, move on to you.
I'm going to have to go to your camp, Marty. I think it's going to be Cardiff this year. They have came out of the gate, probably apart from Sheffield, the strongest. But I think it's too tough to do it 2 years in a row. Now, I know Sheffield, this would be their third year in a row. And it's the pressure starts to really pile on. I think Cardiff... yes, okay, they've lost one of their games in the league so far, but I think they're going to be big. I think it's going to be an interesting year with their new rink. They're playing with a similar ice surface to everybody else. They're not having to think about the different style of play, home and away. I think they're going to do big things this year.
Okay, good. Aaron?
I'm going to put my blinkers on. It's going to be the Giants. I don't care about any other team. It's going to be the Giants. And we are, you know, we're not biased in this podcast.
No, we're clearly not. as we sit here looking over at Dave, who is currently rocking his Belfast Giants polo shirt and holding his Belfast Giants mug, which belongs to me, but I gave it to him anyway. And so it's quite interesting. My heart wants to go with the Giants. I like to think this year maybe we've got a good shot and we've had a good strong start. Well, it's a questionable start, I suppose, shall we say, because our preseason didn't go very well. But
we lost that first game. And
we lost our first game against Fife, which wasn't good. But we've rebounded. We've came back quite strong. We've done quite well. See how that goes. For me though, I think I'm leaning again towards Dave. I just think Cardiff are on the cusp of taking something. I just think they lost out last year. They just they faltered in the last part. They did a bit of a Brayhead last year, and they kind of fumbled a bit towards the end.
Where did they come in the end up?
They ended up, was it second after Sheffield?
Right. Yeah,
or was it Brayhead came second? I can't remember.
They were second or third, if I can't answer.
But they were right there at the end. Even at the end of the season, they were right there. And I just think they were just tipped to it at the right at the end.
What changes do you think they've done that?
I don't know. I think they've strengthened up the team. I think some of the players that they've the cut out, shall we say? Not to go into too much
the sort of heavy bits
of the Twitter stuff that happened this week. I think they've cut out a few players there who, and I think they've replaced them with some good strong players that will kind of maybe take them that bit further. Who else looks good? I mean, I don't want to say it, but like they've had more games, I suppose, than everyone else. I'm not going to say it because I hate every ounce of me is screaming right now to say, don't say this, don't talk about this, but like you can't look away at the fact that the Panthers have had a good start.
You totally can. Just ignore it.
They did get thumped by Sheffield.
They did
7-5.
I don't know
if it was a proper thumping. I think it was a tight enough game, and it just got away from Sheffield more than, it got away from Nottingham rather than them letting slip or anything.
Yeah, but I think my gut's going to go with Cardiff, I think. So I suppose time will just tell them. We'll review it at the end of the season to see who's right and who predicted it right again.
Yeah.
Also, before we get into our main stories, I just wanted to kind of just touch upon something quite big for the Elite League. A big milestone, shall we say, for a team in the Elite League. And our own team, the Belfast Giants, this weekend reached 1,000 games. Big milestone for the Giants. 999 was this weekend at the SSE, or the Odyssey, as we still call it. And they played their away game there over the weekend in Dundee for the 1,000th game. It came up today on Facebook, and that's the reason why I wanted to raise the question. 1,000 games. We've been there for a number of years now. And I commented on the Facebook page my favourite memory, but just any favourite memories that stick out, one favourite memory that stick out for you about the Giants?
I actually commented my favourite as well, and it was a photo I posted. I obviously came into this later than you guys, came to the Giants later than you guys, and my favourite memory is still the league win while I've been a fan, and it was Jeffrey Suez passing me over Monty that was full of beer, and letting me take a good swig out of Monty. That was one of my favourite memories.
It's a good memory. Yeah. Dave?
Mine would have to be the Challenge Cup we won in on St. Patrick's Day in the Dundonald Ice Bowl.
Yeah.
With, I don't know, it must have been 2,000, 3,000 people crammed into that tiny wee building. We thought the whole place was going to explode. But it was one of those years where it was like, it felt like we hadn't won in a while. We hadn't. But we went from a lost the coach, the club struggling, players leaving left, right and centre. Had a turnaround the year before with like Stevie Lyle doing the 16-game winning streak. And then coming in the year after doing the Challenge Cup and knockout in the same year under Thornton. Which is, whenever he was announced to come back, everyone was a bit, I don't know. But I think, you know, he's got the pedigree in the league, so it's what it's worth. But the thing got me was the sheer noise out of a building that we never play in. It's great.
Yeah, it's a good memory. It's a good one. Aaron, have you got any memories? Anything particular stands out for you?
To be honest, I can't remember who we were playing, but it was the season just before we all got our season passes. And we were all... Sorry, John.
Thanks for that.
But there was a whole big crowd. Your bro was all there. Was there. And we just won the game by an amazing way. And the whole crowd was singing. We were even singing all the way down the corridor after the game had finished. And it was just such an amazing atmosphere. And I even remember the other team's fans being, you know, joining us in the bar. And it was just such a friendly atmosphere. And that was pretty much what kind of swung me for getting the season ticket the next year. There was none of this messing around. It was just, okay, we're here for a good time.
Yeah. So many, and I said this earlier, so many memories. Like, I mean, you think about all those years. Like, this is our 10th season now.
Yeah.
So obviously relatively compared to some people we came in a bit later than obviously others, but 10 seasons, I mean, there's been so many memories over those 10 seasons, but for me it's a mix of just those other people that you meet through all the games and stuff when you go away to the away games, and you meet the same people, you see the same faces, and it's great. I kind of mentioned on Facebook, and I'm still going to stick with it. My favorite memory is definitely the Sheffield doubleheader away, and that was in that same year, Dave, that you're talking about. We had to play into the Knockout Cup in order to play in the league. Yeah. So basically, we didn't qualify it from the year before, so we had to play our way in. And basically, it was basically said, right, well, we have to play in. Give us whoever you want to give us, and we'll play against them. We don't care who it is. And we end up getting Sheffield. So we had to play Sheffield two games. It was in a Sheffield Ice Arena or whatever, the smaller one, and it was just out of this world.
It was good.
Between just the crowd, us just giving it stacks, lots of noise, between your brother coming with his and falling over the steps in front because he got so excited he fell over the seats in front, and down to what you mentioned earlier on, Todd Kelman winning the 50-50 at the game. It was just the icing on the top. It was such a good weekend.
It was one of those ones where you were sitting back and the camp, everybody was like, right, we're going to go into the Challenge Cup. We had defunct it for a few years, and the New York decided, right, if we're going to do it, we're going to do it right, we're going to go in for everything. And they went in for both the knockout and the Challenge Cup, and it was the right, okay, you have to play in, you have to play last year's winners and stuff. And it was not expected to win. We had to win both games. We couldn't just win one of them or something. It was a really weird setup. And the start of the season, Thornton had agreed that Kreese was going to be the starting netminder for all the cup games, and so Kreese is out in nets and plays a blinder. That whole year was a bit of a cracker, even going right up to the final. The only reason Kreese wasn't in playing was because he had been dancing on the table the night before and broke his ankle.
That's right. He injured himself before the game. That's right. That's completely forgot about that. Yeah, a lot of good memories. So 1,000 games so far have gone past, and you know, here's to 1,000, 2,000, 3,000 more games.
Absolutely, here.
Yeah, we're looking forward to them. I'm sure we'll still be there, hopefully, when it comes to that point.
Fingers crossed.
That takes us just into our first part of our usual running order. So for anybody who's listening for the first time, it's a new season. Our episode takes the form of a hockey game, kind of. We do a bit of a brief warm-up, and then we move into period one of hockey, which covers local news, period two, which covers news from across the pond, and period three, which is just general hockey headlines. And then we finish off with just some other little segments towards the end. So if you guys are happy enough, we'll get stuck into period one of hockey. Okay, period one. First up, as I said, it's local coverage, so it's all roundup from around the Elite League, the English Premier League, and so forth. Guys, the first story that I want to touch upon for this section is a nice little non-biased piece written by The Star, which is
basically Sheffield Star.
Yep. So basically, this is a story. This is obviously talking about Sheffield Steelers' recent run of form in the CHL, and they basically took the world by storm. Or as the words exact, I'll read the exact words here because I thought it was quite. This is what I thought was the most best piece of writing ever. So Steelers pulled off one of the most impressive wins of their 25-year history on Sunday night. Sheffield turned the hockey world order upside down by beating multi-million-pound aristocrats of Red Bull Salzburg 5-2. So basically, despite being put out of the Champions Hockey League qualifying group, the players proved their best they can, and they beat basically Salzburg. It was a good win for Sheffield, first off, for such a big team that they beat. The main reason to bring this up again is, year on year, we have a team that enters from the league, it goes into the CHL. A lot of time and effort and players and stuff and money goes into supplying players, coming over early and getting players into the CHL. But nothing really ever comes from it from the first round.
Well, guys, apart from European teams changing their coach and then folding.
Yeah.
Whenever they get beat by elite league teams like last year.
Guys, what's your thoughts on CHL?
I think it's definitely something that is good. I think it should be there. I think that the format needs to be changed. I do think that there should be, instead of the Elite League maybe playing in a full group, they had to do like a qualification. No, this is the qualification group, but there's probably teams that, like the Continental Cup teams, that are probably almost in the same area. You know, there's teams like, not necessarily, obviously, that a lot of the teams have changed now, but you guys that we played a few years back, you know, you could do, they could all equally be drawn into it, and they would do the same and end up near the bottom. I think the Elite League is definitely the lowest league in the CHL, and it is tough to be thrown in with those big clubs that have an awful lot of money. I do think it's nice for them to play in Europe, but I would rather a more, I say local affair, but you know, the likes of the Continental Cup, where it was one weekend, one game, four teams hammered all out. Even if that was to qualify for the CHL into the, you know, that CHL qualification group, I think us, the likes of Elite League teams playing likes of Salzburg, I know that they won, but I think a lot of that was that they had already qualified, I believe. You know, there's stuff that the sometimes it can just look bad. It can make the Elite League look a lot lower quality than it is.
I know there's probably a perception that the hammering that the Elite League teams can get does kind of put the league down a little bit, but I think the last couple of years, at least, there's been big wins, this being one of them. I think that kind of puts us on the map for 10 minutes. It gives the league its 5 minutes of fame every year, if it happens, and you're probably seeing players taking note of our league more than if it had never happened before. So you can probably attribute a couple of players to coming across into our league because of these victories, because we make European news, because we're making maybe international website headlines for 10 minutes until something more important elsewhere happens. There's people reading about it. So I think there is a value given to it that the Continental Cup doesn't necessarily get. The CHL is a different level of competition altogether, and it does get that international look because of the teams who are always there.
Yeah,
so I think there is a benefit to it, not necessarily to the league as a whole, but just occasionally, I think it's good to get that PR and get us out there.
Yeah, I suppose that's a good point. You could attribute maybe some players that maybe wouldn't have thought about this league. You could attribute to the CHL. You could attribute to just that just being seen in those top leagues, and obviously European teams and stuff in a European competition. Obviously, maybe draws in players that maybe wouldn't have thought about it before. But that's an interesting take on it there, John. Moving on. John, you were talking about you had put down just a pointer on the EPL, Lightning Pirates.
Yeah, it's not something that we spoke an awful lot about last year, was the EPL, and I thought it was quite interesting just what's happened over the start of their season, mostly because it has a little bit of an Elite League link. This year, there's two teams who are really standing out over the first two weekends, and it's the Milton Keynes Lightning, who are already known to be an expansion franchise for the Elite League for next season, and the Hull Pirates, who are effectively what was the Hull Stingrays before they folded two seasons ago. Mm-hmm. They have been the two teams that are sitting at 4-0 so far this season. They're both sitting at the top of the EPL, and they're coming up for a sort of big sort of top of the table early season top of the table clash this weekend, where they'll meet for the first time. I thought it was interesting just to see where they're sitting in the table, and it's good to see that a team that's coming up to the Elite League next season, the Milton Keynes Lightning, are sitting at the top of the EPL. We haven't just taken who's going to be cheap to bring up as a franchise into the Elite League. They're not coming just to be that bottom half of the table potentially team for next year. They're not competing with Edinburgh and potentially Fife and Dundee for those bottom three places in the Elite League. They could be coming here to play for top end places.
Sure, yeah.
Dave, I'm going to come to you on that. What's your thoughts on that in terms of... So we're saying we've got possibility. You know, John was mentioning there, you know, we've got these two teams here, you know, at the first few games they're dominating or whatever. Do you think there's any really much you can tell from that between the level between the EPL and coming up to the Elite League?
There's definitely going to be a step for these, for any team coming up, but the big difference with Milton Keynes is they have put a lot of effort in their defence and netminding. This year, I think it was the Latvian netminder that they signed. I think could be making that up. But they put a lot of effort into finding the right pieces to the puzzle. I don't know whether they will. It'll always be a step. You know, there's always going to be a bit of a learning curve. But I think that as a club, they're known for doing things right. You know, they have a really good youth program. They have a really good sort of expansion. You know, where they bring the actual youths through into their actual roster. And they've looked to do stuff like plan for the future. They've probably brought their netminder, I'm nearly certain, was brought in on a 2-year deal.
Yep.
To come up with them into the Elite League. So they've hired an Elite League standard international netminder to come with them, which means it's give that guy, and because the style of hockey is very similar in the EPL, just with that the less imports, more focus on British players, which means that sometimes the tempo is a bit slower, but the style is still very similar, that physical hockey, the sort of a North American style of hockey. So it's give this European netminder the ability to find his place and be able to get him ready for British hockey.
I suppose it's it'll be a first for Milton Keynes Lightning, obviously coming up into the league, but Hull, obviously the Hull Pirates, it's a new team. I'm using cover commas there, but no one can see it. Hull's new, but they're not new to the elite league. You know, the arena and stuff has been set up already for that sort of thing, so you know, it wouldn't be new to them. Moving on, Dave, new season has started, and a few changes to the elite league, and you were kind of highlighting that on the running order there.
Yeah, so I made a statement, and it's more for my curiosity what you guys think. And it's just to look at things like the big changes, the format changes that should have happened. And it was things of using goal line technology, and then the actual changes that have happened, which is the 3-on-3. Now there's a great piece on the Elite League website, and on the Giants has been linked to it, for a SoundCloud piece with Tony Smith, where they talk about what they wanted to do, what they were looking to do this year with the Elite League. And one of the areas they wanted to look at was goal line technology, so the use of video replays and goal line cameras and things like that. Now, unfortunately, they've been unable to implement the technology because two tenant clubs as well, I may add, are unable to put the facilities in. You know, we don't know exactly who they are, but there's only so many tenant clubs left in the Elite League now, so you just can draw your own conclusions.
Well, I think effectively what the issue was, I listened to Tony's interview about a week and a half ago, it went up now. And basically he was saying that it is coming this season, but they've just had issues about sort of getting the right signature on the dotted line.
Yeah,
because it's an infrastructure change that has to be made to these arenas rather than just something simple that gets a couple of holes drilled. It's not as simple as a couple of holes are drilled in the nets that the teams own anyway, and it's done that way.
Well, we know that the facilities are in Dundee. It was mentioned on their webcast last night, because it was one they wanted to use it. For one of the goals that were disallowed.
Were they allowed to use it?
No, they're not allowed to use it because there's two teams that don't have it. It's an even playing field.
It's funny you're talking about this, because I was watching the after the game last night. Dundee's coach was talking about his disappointment. Well, he tried to be as unbiased as possible. He tried to be as
political
as he could, without saying that he was really annoyed about what the officiating last night. But he had said that he still doesn't understand why they haven't moved to a 4-man system, based on the fact that like everyone else is running it. And he felt last night particularly a 4-man system would have worked well, because then he would have caught some stuff, and also the goal and stuff was also discussed. So it's interesting that, you know, we're obviously we're talking about this new video replays and stuff whenever it was mentioned as well last night. You're also saying about 3-on-3 overtime.
The 3-on-3 overtime obviously has been a huge success in the NHL. You know, increasing the pace and allowing more games to get resolved in OT rather than going to penalty shootouts. And we all know that I'm not a massive fan of penalty shootouts. I know Marty dies every time there is one.
Yep.
And a 3-on-3, you know, opens up that space. Now, the only thing I'm concerned about is the bigger ice. 3-on-3 on the bigger ice. Is it going to be as interesting? Is it just going to be three guys skating around that never meet each other? You know, is it going to be basically basketball on ice? You know, skate up, take a shot, turn around, take another shot. You don't know. We have to wait and see. I haven't seen any of them yet so far. I know that the Giants went 3-on-3 in Brayhead, but I didn't get a chance to watch the highlights.
Do you have any idea how much bigger our rinks are compared to
the ours are 110 feet, and it's 98 feet.
Yeah,
right, okay. So it's big enough, and they're slightly wider. Don't know what the width is.
Yeah, we're using Olympic sizes, isn't it?
Yep.
And then
international size rinks.
Just moving on, toward the end of the period, I have a few just other points, just quick point headlines, just to go through. Starting up with Brayhead, this weekend went 0-for-5 in their games. Ryan Dingle has been named captain of the Fife Flyers this weekend. Storm have also named their captain this weekend as well, in the shape of Trevor Johnson. Goaltender Jendrik Pasil, why do I put down names that I can never pronounce? Is not expected to miss any further games after withdrawing from Sunday's game due to injury. I'm sure the Panthers are happy to hear that. Sheffield emerged winners of that game, actually, after a 12-goal thriller and beating the Panthers. We can discuss that. Edinburgh Capitals have announced the signing of D-Man, Joslav Hertl. Is that how you would pronounce it, John?
I have no idea.
And also, just coming out today that I noticed and I just wanted to put in there too, was Kelvin Offering's number 24 shirt being retired by Straubing, his team. It was a big honour for him.
Awesome.
And that was nice. That happened over the weekend. And if you get to see the video of that, that is some crowd. That was some reaction to that shirt being retired. And, you know, well done to him.
A 9-year franchise man, so nobody more deserving of it.
Guys, any points on any of those? Anything you want to say about any of those pointers that I said before we move on to the next period?
All the best, Brayhead, for the season.
how can you choke before you start the season?
That's a bad start.
It's like, sorry, Finnerty, but...
Yeah, that's a bad, bad start. Okay, well, if you have nothing else, then we'll move swiftly on to period 2 of hockey.
Welcome to period 2 of hockey. This period is where we'll talk about hockey from Europe and across the ponds and everything in between. What we'd want to cover in this, with a few pieces, we've all brought up bits and pieces, but we'll start off with Marty's piece on the national anthem protests that have been happening in sport in the last...
Yeah, this is just following on from obviously the quite high profile protest that was taken, that took place within the American Football League, and that was Colin Kaepernick basically protesting about Black Lives Matters, the whole thing, the what's transpiring at the moment in the States in relation to young black men and stuff being killed senselessly, through gun crime and whatever else, and a number of times that's to do with police officers and stuff who were responsible for the shootings. It's kind of now kind of moved into the world of hockey, in that the Team USA coach, as John always describes him, Mr. Angry.
Angriest man in hockey,
John Tortorella, was asked recently by SportsCenter what his take on everything that's going on with the protests, and John came out and said, if any of my players sit on the bench during the national anthem, then they're going to sit out the rest of the game. Very strong things being said there, but that's not surprising coming from John. He's a very outspoken man. I remember correctly, he got fined like $30,000 during the Winter Classic last year, when he came out to say that the officials were basically going against the team because they're trying to extend the amount of period of play
2012 when the Rangers played, when he was the coach of the Rangers.
And he was he had said that basically between NBC and the officials that they were transpiring to make sure that they could expand the length and the time to get more coverage and stuff. I suppose the reason I brought it up is obviously, the president of the United States, Barack, came out himself and said that he would support the fact that players are doing this, and he thinks he's come out and said one thing, and then there's a lot of controversy around what's the right thing to do, what's not, and people are saying that how it's so anti-American, and how he doesn't love that, by doing this you're very anti-American, and that you're basically going against you're showing up all the hard work that the soldiers and stuff and the US military has done for the people of the United States by not standing up and whatever else, and all the people coming out in support of what he done. I suppose just raising it, and it's coming into the world of hockey, are you surprised at who it was, first of all, that obviously has said this, or any kind of thoughts on your opinions on this?
Well, I'm surprised that Sportsnet even thought they had to ask John Tortorella for an opinion on something, and he wouldn't have just got it out there anyway. But it's to each their own. I think one of the important things to note is that it's caused all this media outrage everywhere. There was a week where you didn't see this on the news after he knelt during the anthem. Everyone else was on their feet. But it's interesting to note that loads of NFL officials have come out and actually supported his actions, and have said that is his right to protest. Not to protest, but to opt out of the anthem rather than actually take part. So the NFL seem to have absolutely no problem with it. That's John Tortorella, and the media seem to have a massive problem with it.
Yeah, I mean, it's gotten to the point where, isn't it the 49ers? Isn't that where he plays for?
Yeah.
Isn't it? It got to the point where, their fans were filming themselves burning the jerseys and stuff, burning his jerseys and stuff with a number and stuff on it.
Well, interestingly enough, if you read the piece later on, you talk about the jersey being burnt. NFL fans have obviously spoken out, and your man Kaepernick's jersey went from the 33rd overall most sold jersey on the NFL store to the first overall highest sold on the NFL store.
I haven't read
so
that.
Whether these people are all buying them to burn them or whether they're actually out in support, I don't know. But whatever's happening there, if he's getting anything off the top of these jersey sales, he's doing well enough for just kneeling down for a minute and a half.
There's part of me that would think, like, I think it's up to the individuals about who they what they protest for and how they do it. And, you know, we've seen it all with the 1980 Olympics with the fist, you know, to show the same idea. During the national anthem, whenever the flags were being raised, and it's the same idea. It's just somewhere down the line it had quietened. The sort of hanging your head was a better way to, you know, show your support. Kneeling down, it could be just construed as being offensive during a national anthem. You know, you're really meant to stand during any national anthem. I know that it's the same thing, but we have the problem every year in any rink we go to as Giants fans where we don't really have an anthem and we have to stand.
Well, that's the thing I was going to say as well. Like, we're looking at it from a standpoint in this, but we all go to the Giants hockey over here. We don't do anthems. It's not done here while it is done in the rest of the league. So it's probably an unusual one for us to have to think about when we don't actually do an anthem. Mm.
What I would love to see is, you know, if the NFL's all up for this, is some of their large profits to be going to charities to try and rectify it. You know, they do have charity outreach programs in the NFL, and, you know, maybe they should be looking at things like deprived areas and within their communities. For example, likes of Oakland, where the Oakland Raiders play, it's not known for being an affluent part of the United States with a large black community. There's money there that needs to be spread out to the actual people.
Well, he's not just taking any though. He's going to donate his first million.
I mean the actual league, not the player.
Oh, right.
I think
sorry.
The league, as the officials, should make something. You know, I think it's brilliant that he's doing it and he's showing backing it all up. But I think the league, you know, if they're coming out and saying, "Yeah, we agree," you think that they really should back it up with a bit of money.
I suppose it is really just that it's going to be down to it's the national anthem.
Yeah.
It's not that rare that you see someone who's in the spotlight using their time on the spotlight to bring their views. Like, actors and actresses do it all the time when they're picking up their Emmys or whatever on stage, and they talk about whatever thing that's in their mind at that particular point. But it's just because it's the national anthem that's really kind of sparking it up.
Yeah, it's like when you think about it, it's not even the same kind of thing, because obviously it's completely different. You know, it's a completely different story. But just, you mentioned that you had the thing last year in the Oscars where a lot of the big stars didn't go to the Oscars; they boycotted the Oscars because there wasn't enough black representation in movies, because nobody was nominated last year.
Yeah.
So I suppose that, you know, you're saying, you know, you're using your position to kind of highlight something.
Yes.
Which is obviously always a good idea. And when you're on such a world stage, especially when it's coming up to this World Cup of Hockey, you know, it's such a world stage. It's right around the world. You know, I can see why maybe some players might decide that's the right time to do it. But obviously, you know, Mr. Angry doesn't really want them to.
Okay, so the next point is brought up by John Ford, and I'll let him introduce this one just because of what it is. I don't want to give the ways around.
A
bit more sensitive.
Yeah, a bit more of a sensitive one here. Anyone who's around sort of the world of hockey will have known that this week, European hockey lost a member of Team Stripes. Czech referee Pavel Lanka died in the hospital following taking a slap shot to the head. He was refereeing a juniors, an under 16 exhibition game, and suffered a severe head injury on the ice, and was taken straight to hospital, but unfortunately died a few days later. I know for our league, all the referees over here wore black bands this weekend in memory of Pavel, and a good number of rinks had either a moment's silence or a moment's applause for him throughout the league there. So it was just really to bring that up and kind of just mention that it's a lot of people talk about the effects that the game can have on players. I know we've all had a bit of a laugh every now and then. A couple of seasons ago, I know that we had a laugh at Hicks for getting one of the biggest bruises I've ever seen on a human body ever when he took a puck into the side of his body. But this is a different side of it altogether, and it's yeah, it was just to kind of highlight it and say that thoughts are with Pavel's family.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, as you say, sometimes you kind of forget that, you know, yeah, we do make fun and we kind of...
Refs are people too.
Yeah, yeah. And it is very sad. But yes, John, good, well played.
24 years old.
It's a shame, isn't it?
Yep.
Scary.
24 years old and refereeing international as well, you know, yeah. No matter what age group it's on, it's going to be... It's probably come up to the highlights of his career and stuff, so...
Yeah. Scary.
We'll not dwell on that too long. We'll move on to the next topic, which is back to hockey in a more traditional sense. We just wanted, this is my topic, and I wanted to bring up the United States' stunning loss to Team Europe. I think that looking at the whole setup at the World Cup of Hockey was that people were writing off Team Europe before they even got on the ice, and then they came out with an unbelievable display. A lot of people are now starting to get really concerned about Team USA's ability this time round, and it's a lot of the players are starting to sort of speak out, and you know, we need to get together and keep together. And
well, one of the biggest things that I saw over the last sort of 24-48 hours was a huge call for Phil Kessel to be called up. No, I mean, there have been shouts anyway that Phil Kessel should never have been left out of the team, but I think the angriest man in hockey, John Tortorella, is going to be under a lot of pressure now to have a bit of a last-minute call-up to bring Kessel from wherever he's training at the minute down in the US to bring him up across the border to Toronto.
Yeah, US needs to win their next game, otherwise they're out of the tournament. Wow. If they don't win the next game, that's them out, and that's even missing the prelim, isn't it, the pre-qualifying round, or whatever.
I'm trying to think, is that game actually today?
I think it is today, you know, so you're there tomorrow night, I think. But yeah, they have to win their game. I think, you know, they have to win their game in order to get through to the next round, and yeah, that'd be a big blow if they're put out so early on.
So have they lost every game that they've played so far?
It's like a short knockout kind of thing, so you only play two or three games, or whatever.
Tomorrow. Their game is tomorrow.
Yeah. So it's a quick knockout kind of idea of tournament. So you would just move through, and then so that's that way. But yeah, they need to win their next game in order to get through.
You know, the thing that always concerns me is that yes, okay, a loss is a loss, but do not score.
Mm.
Yeah,
you know, you need to be putting goals in. You need to be at least pressuring. Now I've only seen the highlights. I haven't seen the game in detail, and I think that there's going to be, if they don't, you know, USA were in the you know, that run up, they were pretty good. They looked pretty well, and a lot of it just looks to be that the rest of the teams maybe were treating them as warm ups.
I think the biggest issue is, for the USA especially, it's the fact that it was such a spectacular loss to Team Europe, Team Europe are one of these teams, along with Team North America, who have been put into and created for this competition because they couldn't find other countries with big enough hockey programs to put enough good players together to bring this tournament up to the level that they want it at. So they've put together these patchwork teams of Team Europe and Team North America. Now, one of those patchwork teams is absolutely performing as far as Team North America goes. Team Europe have had the shock win and could go further now because of that shock win if they're successful in their next game. Team USA are, as you said, Marty, they're really under it here. As far as the rest of the tournament goes, I don't know about you guys, but I don't think anyone expects anyone else to win except for Team Canada based on their first result. A 6-0 thrashing of Team Czech Republic. Every pundit out there is just putting it down. It's going to be Canada. The rest of the matches are for the places from 2 to 8.
Yeah, yeah, it's going to be interesting. The term they use in this article that I have is ragtag group, which I thought was probably ample. Looking at the roster, there's some really great names, you know, for the Team Europe, but it's the fact that they managed to pull together a win against USA, who have unchanged for a good few years.
It's impressive, definitely.
By the time we come to the next recording, we'll probably know how this has all panned out, because it's all going to happen over the next week and a half or so.
Just sticking with the with the World Cup of Hockey, just because it was something I read today. It was an interview that was had today with Ovechkin. Did anybody see this?
No.
So they were talking about the World Cup of Hockey, and if it was successful this year, that the next one will be in 2 years' time, which conflicts with the
Olympics.
Winter
Olympics.
So basically the whole thing was that the NHL have said that they would consider dropping the Winter Olympics as one of their options of dates in order to facilitate the World Cup of Hockey. Ovechkin came out and said that no matter what, he'll play for his country. Even if he's told he's not, he'll still take the league and he'll play for his country. He also made a tongue-in-cheek kind of comment that he made. I think he was a bit of a smirk when he said it, but he said if it came to the point where in 2 years' time where he told he couldn't play in the Olympics, he'd walk away from the NHL. But I think that was tongue-in-cheek, to be honest.
Yeah, I don't think it's any surprise to hear the NHL say that they would walk away from the Olympics. I mean, everyone knows the 12 months leading up to the Winter Olympics is always the same. It's always the discussion of, is the NHL going to release the players? It happens every 4 years. Now that the NHL is so involved in this other competition where they are bringing the money in, they are opening up their arenas. I mean, the World Cup of Hockey this year has been held in Toronto. I mean, it's NHL Central. They're the ones that's been broadcast on Game Center, their app, their television system. It's not going out free to the world. They're not losing out on revenue. I don't think it's a surprise. What it'll come down to is players like Ovi, and what they decide to do. Is national pride more important to them than annoying the NHL? And we'll see in a couple of years.
Does anybody think that going back to an amateur system would maybe be a smarter move for ice hockey in general? You know, that's where it all started. The Olympics was an amateur tournament. The Olympics are meant to be in an amateur whole setup. No, it's not meant to be professional. You know, previously all the boxers were amateur until this year. Team of golfers up until this year, it was all amateur. You know, and it's now this move.
I think there's something to be said for. I think it creates a more level playing field.
Yeah.
By having that, you know, if you can imagine that, and then yes, okay, then you'd have to argue then that anybody who's playing professionally in the UK would be able to join the UK team.
Yep.
I suppose you would have that argument.
But yeah, but I still think that would be.
It would even the playing field a lot more. I think it would make. I think it would make for a very interesting sport.
I don't know.
I think it's came to the point now where, but I think it's came to the point now in the Olympics particularly, where you're going into the Olympics, you're kind of like, well, you know, the top three teams are going to take it.
Yeah.
So it's kind of.
But is it like? You can't really class the Olympics as amateurs.
The Olympics is meant to be.
It's supposed to be people who haven't signed pro contracts and gone, taken the step and gone pro.
Okay.
Is what it was supposed to always be.
I just want to say, like Mo Farah and all that kind of
they're
stuff.
Professional athletes, but
yeah, they're professional athletes, but they're not meant to be. The way it's all changed since it all was incepted, but it's meant to be.
It's things like soccer have changed it all.
If you think about it, Mo Farah made his name through the Olympics. So he made his name through that sport, through the Olympics, and he came to prominence through the Olympics. Whereas the likes of Ovechkin, the likes of, you know, Datsuk, the likes of all those big players, they made their name more on the NHL stage, on a more commercial stage, than it is on a sports related stage. If you know what I mean? So there's a difference. So where before, where Dave was saying, what used to happen in the end, especially even in like the Winter Olympics back, you think about
the Miracle
Ice on Ice team. All of those players were all taken from colleges and recce leagues and all that kind of thing, rather than the NHL teams. Actually, the NHL teams players came to try out for it, and they were all sent away.
Mm.
Where they brought in players who were not on the main stage already, which is what I think sometimes it was probably going to be better. But
yeah, the stuff that, you know, that whenever it was like that, obviously it's all before my time. I've only watched highlights and replays and amateur dramatizations of it. It all happened before I was born. But the big thing that from then was that it was like a precursor to your draft. You know, if you played for your country and won an Olympic gold medal, you were almost guaranteed your draft, or you were going to be sought after more. You know, it wasn't always the case, but you know, it was like you could look back and see these guys that were playing junior hockey for their country.
Yes.
Now we still see that with the junior world championships, which is an amazing tournament. I watch it every year, and it's always a hotly contested, and it'd be very similar to that.
Mm.
That's what it used to be. It's just it was the change to And it's with the Olympics changing to become a bit more corporate as well, high paying sponsors and whatnot. But you never know.
Just running off this period, Dave, if you don't mind. I'll just go similar to the period one, just a few other bullet points, just of notes. Some other headlines. So sticking kind of to the World Cup of Hockey, these are kind of things coming out of that. So John, you mentioned it. Team Canada came up 6-0, dubbing against Czech Republic in the World Cup. Also, after several days of conflicting reports, it's been revealed that Dallas Stars forward Taylor Seguin suffered a hairline fracture in his heel during a World Cup of Hockey game. He'll be out for a while. He's going to be reevaluated by the Stars next week. Anaheim Ducks forward Rickard Rakell underwent surgery last week, which has taken him out of play for a short time. He hasn't been able to go to the Ducks training camp, and also put him out of Team Sweden for the World Cup as well. Also, bittersweet one, Aaron, this is in the news today. It's obviously with the death of the Philadelphia Flyers founder last year. This is the 50th anniversary of the Flyers this year. Sadly, he passed away this year, and they're going to do the 50th anniversary, so they're planning to do a nice memorial moment at the start of the season for that. So it's something to keep an eye out for.
Oh, that's very nice. I haven't seen that yet.
Yeah, I only seen that today for the first. Apart from that, that's me done. Do you have anything else?
No, not for me. I think that obviously the international hockey is, the leagues are all just starting. Starting to warm up with the World Cup of Hockey. The NHL is not going to be starting proper until October. So it'll be an interesting run up. We'll get to see a bit more, hopefully. Fingers crossed, because we'll have a bit more time. The Europe, to tell you the truth, I haven't even had a chance to look this year. Usually that would be something I'd be paying attention to, and it's been a bit quiet. But yeah, I think that's us for period two.
Okay.
Okay, and we're moving on to period three then, which is all together now, our general
Knocky News.
Happy days. If you've no idea what Knocky News is, go and listen to some old episodes. Right, this one's nice and short and sweet. There's only a couple of stories to chat through here. Marty, you had a fantastic one that came out of Manitoba in Canada.
Yeah, this is the story. I'll read out the story because I think it's funnier if I just read the story out. Police in Manitoba are searching for two men wanted in a beer store robbery earlier this month, in which one of the suspects used an unusual disguise. RCMP in Russell, Manitoba say one of the men was dressed up as a hockey goalie, wearing a blocker, trapper, and carrying a goalie stick. Surveillance video shows the two suspects approaching the establishment. They smash a door and make their way to the cooler, where they grab several cases of beer before getting their way off on foot. He may have been a defenseman or a forward in disguise. He was wearing jersey number 17, an under-traditional number for goalies, a cheeky description from the police. Anyone with any information about this theft or has played against a goalie matching this description is asked to call Russell RCMP. What I love about it is that was news in Manitoba. Yeah. That was sheer brilliance. And the video itself, we'll stick it up. It's funny. It's hilarious.
I love that. Those last two paragraphs there, the description, yes. The issue, the fact that the police have issue with the fact that he's number 17. It's like, really? That's not a goalie number. Why is he number 17?
I love that. Was the disguise. Oh, he's wearing 17. He'd tend to be a goalie, but he could be a forward or a defenseman.
Could be a forward or defenseman. That's, I think it's absolutely brilliant. I love the Mounties.
That's just so good.
Yep, so we'll post a video for that, and you can all have a laugh. And if anyone does have any information, please contact Russell, Royal Canadian Mounted Police. Right, the second and last story that we're going to chat about in period three here is a really quick one. It's one that I just noticed the other day there, was that the NHL are set to announce that goalie shorts specifically are set to get smaller. This is part of a wider program. The NHL is basically trying to slim down the goalies. Traditionally, I think there's been a bit of a history of goalies wearing pads bigger than what they're actually supposed to, one or two sizes. So the NHL is trying to slim the goalies down. This is part of a longer program, which was expected to come in at the start of the season, although it now looks like that the NHL are going to hold back on reducing all of the pads. But it's expected that the slimline pants, they're calling it, because it's North America, are likely to come in before the start of the season. One major issue that they do have with it at the moment is that one or two of the major equipment manufacturers haven't actually started making these things yet. So there are going to be starting netminders out there who won't be practicing at the minute with the new shorts. So that potentially could be an issue. It's expected that later on in the season that the goalies will have everything cut down. Now this is going to include blockers, gloves, chest protectors. Everything is expected to get smaller. What do you think, guys?
Is it still going to be the same amount of protection for a goalie? Yeah.
Protection, yes. It's the actual bulk of the goalie which is being reduced. The idea that goalies are getting squarer and squarer and wider, that's what they're trying to stop.
It's it'd be weird to see a slimmed down version of a goalie. In my head, you know, you just imagine this, like, basically this player who basically just takes over the net pretty much for whatever he's wearing. It's going to be really strange, but yeah, okay.
The concept, I think, the NHL are looking for more goals to make the games more exciting. The easiest way that they can think to do that is to make the goalie smaller and make the net bigger.
Make their job harder.
Yeah. Without making the net bigger, they're making the holes around the goalie bigger.
It'd be some adjustment for a goalie. Mm. Like, if you think, like, there hasn't been really much major changes in terms of the goalie. Like, the equipment pretty much has probably been the same size for years upon years. A lot of the goalies are probably in the NHL and stuff now, all probably came up from juniors wearing something, you know, used to something quite bulky. To move something from quite bulky down to something quite small, that'd be a massive major change for goalies.
It could be one of the biggest changes in goalies since helmets.
It's just the pants. It's just pants
at the moment. Yep, initially for the start of the season, it is just going to be the shorts to these new slimline shorts or streamline shorts, they're calling them. Okay. But it's expected that through the season they could actually bring in the smaller standard sizes for the catchers and for the blockers.
I'm seeing here, if it doesn't come, they'll wait until the off season and announce it for next season, where they will reduce the size of chest protectors in the coming season, as well as shrinking down shirts and jerseys so that they are more rounded off and
Although
actually tighter.
Is it, as you say, the fact that they don't have them yet to practice with before?
Yeah, that seems to be the biggest issue. That the piece does actually talk about it, the fact that a couple of the... It doesn't actually name which manufacturers aren't making them, but it says that there are at least one or two of the major equipment manufacturers are not producing these slimline shorts. Some of them are, so there are goalies out there who will have seen them. Whether or not they're practicing on them yet, we don't know, because obviously the NHL hasn't officially announced anything yet, but it is coming. So the worry is that there's going to be starting netminders out there who are not going to be used to them, and they're going to have to get used to it in season.
Just widen the net.
There's been a campaign for a good few years now that where they've been reducing the size of equipment. It's sort of an ongoing thing, and usually they focus on blockers, catchers, and your shin pads. The old one, the old scenario, and used to see it in the late league all the time, was you'd get your 42 length, but it'd be 42 plus 4. So there'd be 4 inches on top of your actual pads. So when you went down into your butterfly, they almost crossed over, which has gradually been phased out. Now it's generally only plus 2 you get. There's still that wee bit. And you used to see the old thigh pads. You used to see guys that were in bright red thigh pads, and they're gone now. They've been phased out. They're now part of your shorts. Now what I would be worried about is that as they reduce the size, same as you, Marty, is that they sacrifice protection. I know that they did do a similar thing to reduce the weight of forward gears in the sort of late 90s, early 2000s in the NHL, and it seemed to not cause any major issues. The pads got thinner, lighter, they used the carbon fibre and stuff in pads.
Yeah, materials are changing as well. Yeah. So yeah.
Now, the big thing with goalies is they can't use rigid materials in their pads, because rigid materials get hit with something at that speed, or else the vibration still penetrates through. What you need is something that's going to reduce the acceleration of the puck. So that's why at the minute they're the big pads. Now, one thing I do agree with is the sort of going towards the sort of more natural shape. They're looking at more sort of curved edges rather than the blocks. You know, the square edges. The square edges allows the pucks to rebound forward. Allows them to get their catchers on it, their body on it beforehand, where more rounded would allow the puck to flow, so roll around them, which can cause issues.
And that's the other thing as well, Marty, you pointed out, they're talking about reducing the size of the jerseys as well that the goalies are wearing, because there's a lot of sort of additional capture, especially low down. If the jersey's loose, that's going to act almost like a net in itself, sort of slowing the puck down, gives the goalie more time to get down there. So everything's just getting a bit tighter around the goalie as well. I mean, for me, if it's going to lead to more goals, I'm all for it, as long as the goalies are still as protected as they have been.
There's the concern, depending on the how big, if it does increase the goal numbers, it reduces the value of the netminder, which is always a concern because the NHL always struggles to find quality netminders. Every 5-10 years, there's a netminder shortage almost, where the clubs with slightly more money, sacrifice a lot more of their cap for these big netminders, where the other teams maybe need the forwards that they're going to sacrifice their cap to get. So I'll be interested to see. It'll either do one of two things. It'll make the current great netminders look a lot better because they may be able to still keep the goals out.
Yeah.
But the flip side is that maybe it'll highlight major weaknesses in some of their play.
Well, we're talking about the fact that the bulk is going away and the puck's going to hit the bulk, but with the bulk moving away, it does not mean that the netminders are a bit more nimble.
It could be a bit more mobile, so you could see more of these big spectacular pad and glove saves.
Yes.
It depends if they're a acrobatic netminder or if they're angles. They work off the angles.
Yes. Yeah.
Which there's still a lot out there. So.
Yep, there is definitely
reaction saves rather than acrobatic saves.
Yep. Okay. That brings period 3 and our knocky news to an end. So what we'll now do then is we will push straight on then to our 3-star segment. So for anyone who's new to this, our 3-star segment is where the four of us, or generally the three of us, when Aaron's here and he just sits and sort of stands there looking blankly at us because he hasn't watched any games, we pick out 3 stars since our last recording. So because our last recording was a good few months ago, we've basically gone with the start of this season, and we pick out a star game, a star goal, and a star player each, and it never follows any sort of flow. I always just pick random people to go to first. So for the first recording of the new season, I'm going to go with the list as it's in front of me, and I'm going to go to Dave first. And Dave, star game.
This star game I'm picking, what I'll do very quickly first is apologise that all mine are Elite League related, and they're even more related than that, but we'll figure out that later. The game I pick was the last Giants home game on the 17th of this month, the Giants versus the Caps, a game that we as a fan base were a bit, sceptical is the wrong word, but weren't sure what we were going to get. We were expecting sort of a bit of a mixed bag. In the off-season, the Caps seem to have signed really well, some really big names that have some pedigree, the likes of Jared Staal, and the game was very end-to-end. There's no way you could say it was a dull game, and that was proper hockey. There was very little penalties. You were getting to see fast-paced, physical hockey, which resulted in a Giants win, but it was probably the best game of hockey I've seen in a good maybe year in the Odyssey Arena.
Yeah, definitely. I'll jump to myself here because I've picked the same game, and I agree with you. The pace of the game was like nothing I've ever seen from a Giants Caps game before. The first period especially felt like one of the quickest periods of hockey I've ever watched at the SSE. It was unbelievable. I watched the face-off, and then I think the first time I looked up, there was only 7 minutes left to play. I couldn't believe it at all. And Edinburgh really did come out. Now, the main reason I've picked this as my star game, and you guys are all going to have a go at me here, because when we go through the star goal and star player, if you listened last year, you'll notice that there's a name missing that I'm not going to mention in my 3-star segment. And I've picked this game as my star game because Matt Nickerson pulled off one of the most acrobatic moves I've ever seen him do with a lovely little pirouette to let off an absolute rocket of a wrister. Now, granted, it was about 3 miles wide, but it was still one of the best little moves I've ever seen come out of Nicker.
That game was a good game, and the one particular play that stood out for me was there's a nice little play between Mason and Walter in that game.
Oh,
yes.
Oh, unbelievable.
It was beautiful. It was so nice, and that stood out for me in that game.
That's our injury cover man, by the way, this year is Jeff Mason. Yeah, all the best. Right, quickly on then, Marty, your star game is something different.
Yeah, mine is different, and we've already touched upon this already in the episode. We mentioned it earlier on, and it is the CHL game, Steelers versus Salzburg. I mentioned it earlier, and that report said it too. Big upset and a good playing, and it was a quiet performance from Steelers. You know, fair play to them for upsetting the running order there and upsetting, like, you know, the big teams. So, you know, fair play to them. It was a good game to watch. So fair play, and that's why it was my star game.
Absolutely. Can't wait to see who Red Bull Salzburg's new manager is in the next few months. Aaron, do you have anything here, or are we just going to have a moment of silence here?
Just a moment of silence. Do you want to hear those crickets?
Oh, yeah, that's brilliant.
Can I add in crickets?
You can.
Oh, I got to learn how to do that.
Good luck. It took me long enough to learn how to beep Dave. don't even bother. Actually, I don't care. Marty's editing. Go for it. Right, quickly on then, our star goals then. This one's going to be nice and fast. I'm not going to say it. Marty, you were last or second ago. Marty, tell us, what's the star goal? We've all picked the same thing.
Star goal, we've all picked the same one, and that's Derek Rutherford's goal in the preseason
Describe
friendly
it to
game.
Me, Marty. Tell me all about it.
Well, no, we'll leave that up for later on.
We'll come back to that.
He,
but I think
he scored a certain particular goal, and it was a beautiful goal. It's called a Michigan goal. It was a beautiful little goal, little lift. It's a dirty goal to score. It's a dirty goal to score against the goalkeeper, and I'm sure the team were fuming whenever he scored it. It's a simple thing of just lifting up onto your stick and kind of pushing in past your goal. Yeah, it was like a disgusting goal.
It's something that belongs in college hockey. It shouldn't happen in pro hockey, but when it does happen, it's a thing of beauty.
Yeah,
absolutely.
You always look at those sort of things, and yeah, it's a bit of a, you know, meh goal whenever you look at it, you know, for the other team. But really, your netminder should be big enough to stop that. Like,
yeah, all those extra corners they've got, yes, the chest protector should deal with that.
He's not wearing a big enough jersey.
Yeah, that's it. Okay, and on to star player then. Dave, I'm going to come back to you. Can you tell us your star player then?
Yeah, so mine is another Giants-related one. I went with Matt Toe for no other reason than he's a British player. He wasn't signed for us at the start of the season. He's in on a temporary contract, and he has been unbelievable. Now, he hasn't put massive points, but he has put some ice time out there. Like, nearly every shift you look out, he's there or thereabouts. And he's just sacrificing the body. He's just really blue collar hockey in Belfast. That's what we look for, and I think he's filling a role that we need. He allows us to have full four lines. You know, if there's a touch wood, an injury, you know, we have extra people, and he's not affecting our cap. You know, we don't have to worry about extra imports. I think he's done a really good job for us at the start of the season, and it would be a shame to see him leave.
Yeah, absolutely. Matt Toe has been really good at the start of this season. But Marty, you and me, we've both picked the same guy. Do you want to go ahead and tell him who it is?
My star player is similar to my star goal, and another Giants player. We're not biased at all here, are we?
No.
And that's
talking about me having nothing, you know.
Yeah, we all just copied each other.
It's been impressive to start of the season. David Rutherford. He has been exceptional to start this season off, even in preseason and now leading into the start of the season. You know, scoring goals, putting in loads of shifts, you know, sacrificing the body, just getting in there, getting into the tight corners. Just like, everywhere you see him, he's there. You know what? He's been brilliant. He's been impressive so far.
If you're just going to copy each other, yeah, my star player, that's Rutherford guy as well. Apparently,
the guy that Aaron's only ever seen play about twice last season.
Yeah. Apparently, he scored this amazing goal.
Yeah, so. I mean, for me, Rutherford's come in a completely different player from last year. He was brilliant at the back end of last season when he arrived in from Edinburgh. But the way that he started this season has been absolutely brilliant. He's far leaner than he was at the end of last season as well. He's come in, he's lost a lot of weight. He's come in as an absolute powerhouse. I'm going to say it. I feel like he's covering some of the areas that Daryl Lloyd used to do for us. He's not just that same chirpy kind of guy. He's not in everyone's face, but he's that guy. He's going to be that guy this year that we love to watch, but every other team is going to hate him. I feel like that's what he's going to be.
Yeah.
Particularly if he keeps scoring goals like the one he did against the Clan. But, okay, that's great. That's our three stars for this episode. So what we'll do now is we will move on then to our penalty box segment.
All Okay, I'm moving on to the penalty box segment. We've only got a couple of quick ones in this section, so if I'll start off. First one to raise happened over the summer, happened a few weeks back now, but definitely worth mentioning. This was the story of KHL banning Dmytro Rispaev.
Rispaev.
Thank you very much, John. That's for life after his one-man rampage during the preseason game.
One-man rampage?
Yeah, so basically it's... the story basically is the defenseman, basically, he gained infamy basically by going on a one-man rampage against, I think if I remember correctly, it's the expansion club, the first game
of
the
Kunlun Red Star.
Kunlun Red Star,
the new Chinese team that's moved into the KHL this season. So this was...
3 minutes, 3 minutes into the game, he opened up a brawl with pretty much the whole team. Started
like, just him fighting the
so
whole thing.
He sucker punched the forward first, who was then got injured. He then pulled three other unsuspecting players into a fight on the ice before trying to challenge the entire Red Star bench before being pulled away by some of his teammates. And then the game was called after his coach pulled his team off the ice.
Although it wasn't his team, the Kunlun Red Star coach pulled his team off the ice because of it.
So I'll just play a wee bit of a short video there for Aaron so he can kind of see. This is on Twitter, so it was a quite. His actions went viral, so hit the play button there. So he started off, as you'll see, like the game literally had only started 3 minutes in. That was the first hit.
Yeah.
And then it turned into just a mass brawl and fight from this point forward.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I mean, it's. I think there's some chat later on in this, the piece that you've given to us, Marty, the KHL chairman. Basically goes, like, there's a place for physical play in hockey, but he's like, the downright violence and aggression that was shown
has absolutely no place. He finishes with one player and literally goes to the next player.
It's just one after the other, and then he goes to the bench. And when he goes to the bench, he literally almost drags one guy across the boards onto the ice. It's his own team, plus the Stripies, who actually pull him off of everyone.
Yeah.
He would have had a fight with the plexi if he'd seen his own reflection, probably.
Did someone inject him with, like, you know, just pure madness?
I don't know what was going on.
Or something like that.
But the biggest thing, obviously, is we've said he's been hit with a lifetime ban from the KHL.
Wow.
Now, this is not just as a player. He is banned from doing anything for any team, player, backroom, ownership, co-ownership, everything. He is, for the rest of his life, to have nothing to do with the Continental Hockey League, ever. He has been thrown out.
It's not like he's going to get into any other league easily.
Probably come into ours. Edinburgh will be looking for a guy come the second half of the season when their money runs out. Probably.
He could be elite league chairman for all that. The thing that gets me is that he's only 21.
I don't know if it's like... I'm going to guess, and I was just reading at the bottom of it, I don't know if it is, it's like an embarrassment part, because obviously this is an expansion team they're trying to bring in, trying to bring hockey to... basically a new place, trying to bring it into somewhere new, and then obviously for this to happen, it was just an embarrassment for the league, and I'm guessing they had to make some kind of response and kind of like set an example.
And was there, did he come out with a statement, did he say, you know, was there any reason, was there a trigger, was there...
He was never even given the opportunity to do anything like an apology. The league has taken such a hard line, he's basically gone straight out. I mean, interestingly enough, you look at his last two seasons in the KHL, he only played 23 games over his last two seasons in the KHL, but racked up 194 penalty minutes over 23 games.
So he's known for it, like?
He's known for sitting in the bin probably more than he's standing on the ice.
Yeah.
But like Dave says, at 21 years old, that's a really short top flight European hockey career.
Yep. Mm. And he's not going to be the caliber to go far afield, you know. There's a lot of leagues will look at that and go, not going to sign him, even if he was able to play well, because as soon as you sign him, that's the first thing that's going to come up.
Yeah.
Oh,
you know, and he'll never be like, he step onto the ice, he might be a cracking player, but as soon as the refs look at him, they'll put him in the box.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Moving on, next story. John, you threw this one up.
Yeah, this was one I think I just came across it on Twitter actually one day, and then I posted it just on here because I don't think I'd actually shown you guys it yet. Now, Marty and Aaron, I know that you guys have watched the video. This is a huge hit from the SHL. Now, at the time of us doing this, there's no actual information online about what the teams are or who the players are or anything. But we do know it's come from the Supreme Hockey League, which, funnily enough, we've just talked about the KHL as the league below the KHL. Now, Dave hasn't seen this yet, and I think he's just about to play it.
Yeah, a lot of pressure on me for this being interesting. Like,
yeah.
It's going to be such a big
This could fall really flat. So basically, there's two player with the puck is coming forward, and one of the D-men comes across, but the two of them absolutely cut each other in half. They're both left on the ice, but the forward coming through on net does a full 360, yeah. 360 looking. Plus a little bit, to land sort of on his side and head on the ice. It's one of the biggest mid-ice hits I've seen in a long time. And for it to come from the SHL, I thought it was brilliant. Obviously not great for the two players, but just unbelievable mid-ice hit. So it was well worth watching. We'll post that video on the website once we get the episode up, because it's well worth a quick 10-second look.
Definitely. John, sticking with you, another one you've put up, another one.
Yeah, again, this is just a really, really quick one. Over the weekend there, the Giants were playing Dundee Stars, as we've talked about earlier in the episode, and Mike Quinnell, our new D-man, dropped the gloves with Traversa of the Dundee Stars in what turned into a very, very short fight. Now, Quinnell, I looked up the stats, Quinnell is giving away about 10 centimetres and about 20 pounds on Traversa, and just completely one-punches him. I think Quinnell dodges one hit and then just gets him absolutely on Traversa's glass chin and puts him straight down. Now, there has been some online chat that potentially Traversa may have kicked out with a skate on the way down. Still waiting to see if Elite League Dops is going to look at that. At the moment, I think it's really only online chat, but really the bigger story is the complete sort of one-punch knockout. It's one of the cleanest knockouts I've seen in Elite League for a long time.
Yeah, just watching the back there, yeah, you do definitely see, as he goes down, you do see a leg kicking out towards the bottom, towards his left leg. You do see it, and it comes up even towards his chest there. You can kind of see it coming
up.
Yeah,
the worrying thing is that last year, in January, we lost Matt Nickerson for a large part of the season because of something similar with Hendricks taking basically Nickerson's leg out during a fight, which Nickerson put Hendricks straight down, like, on his backside. But there was a definite sweep of the leg. To see something similar happening again to another Giants D-man at the start of the season is quite worrying, especially for the sort of Quinnell. He's come in, he's only played a couple of games, but I think he's actually done quite well. But if he continues to put people down on the ice with one right hook, then happy enough, he can keep doing it.
Good job. Okay, that takes us to the end of our penalty box segment. And moving swiftly on, we're looking at our overtime segment. Our overtime segment, for anybody who doesn't know or is new to this show, is basically just a segment at the end, towards the end of our show, where we just look at other stories, other major things maybe that are hockey related, could be interesting stories or videos that would maybe have caught our interest or attention that we just want to make, just talk about really, I suppose, and kind of highlight. The only one I wanted to raise, guys, in this one, for our overtime segment, it's sadly over the summer break while we were off and we hadn't recorded, the hockey world lost what can only be described as a legend of the game. He had a hat trick named after himself. He played with his, you know, he played numerous years, retiring and then coming back at retirement so he could play with his sons. And of course, everyone knows it's Gordie Howe. Guys, Mr. Hockey, Gordie Howe passed away over the summer. Thoughts?
Well, my big one would be, you know, like if you look at Gordie Howe, he's done more for the sport than anybody. I know that everybody goes on about Gretzky and how great Gretzky was and his points and blah blah blah. But he is the Mr. Hockey. He personifies the sport. You know, it wasn't just scoring, it wasn't just fighting, it wasn't just defense. You know, he did everything. You know, he was known for being able to play anywhere that was needed, and he managed to do that for most of his life. You know, he was playing hockey from, I think, when he was like 16 or something daft. You know, played for the Red Wings for God knows how many years. You know, as Marty said, retired, came back to play with his sons. and you know, they went on to win championships. You know, it's he you know, there's no person that exists in hockey that would be, you know, that would play to that age now, and even, you know, even during his time, people didn't play to that age.
Just to give you some of the stats just on Gordie Howe for anyone who doesn't know, for whatever reason, top 10 scorers for 21 consecutive years, named most valuable player 6 times. He was also named NHL All-Star 23 times and inducted into the Hockey Hall of Fame in 1972. He made his debut in 1946, way back after the war, and played 26 NHL and 6 World Hockey Association seasons. Held all of the scoring records you could think of before being overtaken by Wayne Gretzky. Dave, as you mentioned, he retired in 1971, made a comeback with the Hartford Whalers to play with his sons in 1979-1980, and finally stopped playing at the tender age of 52.
Wow. And he ended that year as an all-star standing beside Gretzky.
Yep. Yeah. I mean,
an iconic image, that.
Yep. Huge player. And again, you know, we can't go without saying about, you know, obviously he made one of the most iconic hat-tricks. Yep. Known to the world of hockey, in that it's a goal, a fight, and an assist in one game for a Gordie Howe hat trick. And it's still called a Gordie Howe hat trick right up until today.
Considered probably more valuable than a normal hat trick.
Yeah, definitely.
Even though, interestingly enough, I didn't know it, but just reading through some bits and pieces, he only ever did it himself once.
Yeah, only did it once, yeah.
Which is amazing to get it called after you and only do it once, but just shows you the power of the man.
He was always known as Elbows. During his playing season, he was all called for elbow penalties constantly whenever it started to come into the sport as he was finishing up. Play with his elbows out.
Yeah, I mean, 88 years of age. He passed away at the age of 88. Great life that he had, and he'd be definitely missed by the hockey world. Okay, with that, moving on to a new segment that we're going to have on the show. Not to put people on the spot, but this is our new segment, which we're going to fondly call Mitchell's Corner. Mitchell's Corner,
no pressure.
Basically, this is a segment, no pressure, Aaron. This is a new segment where something we talk about through the on the podcast, and what we'll do then is we throw it out to Aaron to give us the his best synopsis of what a term means, if that makes sense. So maybe throughout the season, whenever we come across some kind of term that maybe we feel that someone maybe doesn't understand or doesn't know, we'll throw it out to Aaron and he'll put it in his best words and explain it as best as he can.
I want to point out that this is not because I'm an expert. This is not because I know it. It's because I don't know what they want me to say. You just want me to explain it.
That's pretty much it. If you can understand it in whatever way you give it, then other people will have never heard it before. So given the fact that we chose a specific goal, a certain goal, and we talked about it in our star goal segment, and that was David Rutherford's goal in the preseason, and that goal was a Michigan goal. Aaron, can you give us your best definition of what you think is meant by a Michigan goal, and how did it come, where did it come from, how it came about?
I think you kind of summed it up really quite well. It's a really sneaky goal, but I think it's really good. So in other words, the players behind the net, and they swoop the puck with their stick using a bit of momentum, and they hoop it round and into the top left or right corner depending on what they're stuck in. Would that be a fair
excellent use of the word hoop? Hooping it round.
Yeah. I like it. It's very good. And but can you tell us where it came from or why it came to be called a Michigan goal?
Because of some dude called Mike Legg, who played for the University of Michigan.
Hence the name.
Yeah. Oh, my iPad just went off, so all my information just disappeared.
I'll add that out so it sounds like you didn't even need the iPad, you just knew that off the top of your head.
Just knew that off the top of my head. I'm totally not got a Wikipedia article in front of me. So University of Michigan used against University of Minnesota. And as I said, it was hooped around to the top corner of the net, and actually got recognized of the goal of the year. And even the stick that he used is in the Hockey Hall of Fame. Isn't that quite cool?
Oh, I didn't know that. That's cool.
Sent me the Wikipedia link.
I obviously didn't read that. But whenever we go to... So if any of us go to Toronto, we can keep an eye out for that then in the Hockey Hall of Fame.
You all said earlier that it was quite a sneaky goal. And you know,
it is a sneaky goal.
But there has to be some skill put into that.
Oh, there is.
It's a lot of skill. You have to control the momentum of the puck and keep it stuck sort of horizontally vertically. Your stick is vertical and you're using the momentum to stick it.
You see it all the time where the guys go behind the net and then try to hook it into the bottom of the net. So this is just from standing start.
This is it. It's off the ice. It's on the stick. You can hook it round. You can do a 360 like we saw Rutherford do.
Yeah.
But it's off the ice. It's stuck to the end of your stick.
Yeah.
And it's in the top corner. Using the centrifugal force, keeping it up there, and bang, it goes in.
It's just seen as a really dirty, disgusting goal because you do make it basically just takes the mick out of the goalie. It
makes them look stupid. It really makes them look stupid.
And I think that's why people are like, oh, but it's beautiful when you see it. It's lovely.
We'll go off script here and see how much you have done your research. What sport does it come from other than ice hockey? Not in there.
If it's not in here, then I don't know.
Do you want to enlighten us there, Dave?
Hold on, does anyone else know this?
He's looked it up. He's sitting with his computer.
I knew it before as well, because I looked
it up.
The Michigan goal is primarily used in lacrosse.
Oh,
that would make sense. If you were to guess any of them, you would guess something like that.
See,
it's not going to be used in football, for example. Because you're not
podcast where you learn something new. Something, yeah. Oh, that's nice. Okay, guys, that takes us swiftly to the end of this week's episode. I like that. Thank you very much, Aaron, and I'm sure that will return in our next episode.
Tweet us if you want us to check out any terms.
Yes, I'm bringing us swiftly into that then, yeah. Coming towards the end of our episode, as usual, you can interact with us. You can get in contact with us through the usual channels, through our Facebook page, which is just Door 14 Hockey, and also our Twitter account, which is at Door 14 Hockey as well. We also have our website, which is www.door14hockey.com.
Both.
So yeah, get in touch if you have any kind of suggestions for our Mitchell's Corner, or if you have any opinions or kind of any stories you would like us to talk about or anything that comes to your attention. Do send us a tweet or hit us up on Facebook and let us know what you want to talk about. We'll try and feature it in one of our upcoming episodes, guys. Hopefully you've enjoyed your new home, and hopefully you'll feel comfortable now and leading into it. It'll only improve. All good? Everything talked about you just want to talk about after such a long break?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think it was good to get us all back, get another podcast out, and then we'll go from there, I suppose.
Yeah.
I loved it.
Good. Okay, without further ado, I've been Martin.
I'm Dave.
I'm John.
I'm Aaron.
Have a great week.
Thanks go to Aaron Mitchell for audio editing and our online presence. Our theme song, Relapse, by Fall Into Flux, from the album From the Outside Looking In, was sourced from www.freemusicarchive.com.